This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Earlier this week, federal judges rejected two key permits in a move that may impede construction of the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. The proposed 600-mile project would transport natural gas from West Virginia to North Carolina by way of Virginia. Energy companies behind the construction say they can address the court's concerns without significant delay. Environmental groups are calling on federal regulators to halt construction altogether. So how do these legal decisions complicate the pipeline's construction? Joining us to talk about it is Elizabeth Utz. She's a reporter for Southeast Energy News. Elizabeth, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Thanks so much, Frank.
I think I described the rough route of the pipeline. Tell us where it is in terms of the construction. How far along are they?
Yeah. First, just to take a step back, you mentioned 600 miles, just to give context about what a massive undertaking this is. We're talking about a 100-foot-wide construction berth, crossing hundreds of rivers and streams, crossing national forests, crossing the Blue Ridge Parkway. So the pipeline has many of its major environmental permits to limit the harm of this construction, but it still lacks a few key permits. And for that reason, construction is still in the very early stages. In North Carolina, mostly what they've done is tree felling. The pipeline expects to cut about 400 acres of forested wetlands in the state, in North Carolina alone, and so that they've started with that, but still the early stages.
And you get contingent permission to move forward. I mean, who gives the ultimate permission for this project to go forward? Is there one final judge in all of this?
Well, and that's a great question, and it gets right to the heart of Monday's ruling. So the judges struck down two key permits that the pipeline needed on Monday, as you mentioned, and it also strikes at the heart of their permission from the federal government to build the entire project. And that's because the way the law works is that the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, gave conditional approval in October for this pipeline to go forward. But the conditions were huge. A raft of agencies, both federal and state, had to guarantee that they would draft permits that would minimize the environmental harm to the maximum extent under the law.
So they got these permits, the two that we're talking about. I'm going to ask you to talk about the ruling in a minute.
Yep.
These are permits they got. They had them in hand, and then the judge said, oh, wait a minute, those permits are no good. Tell us what they had and why they were then overruled.
Sure. So it's incumbent upon the agencies when they draft these permits to write them in a way that's enforceable and that minimizes water quality damage, minimizes harm to endangered animals, et cetera. The judges on Monday found that two agencies completely failed to do that in their permits. So the first was the Fish and Wildlife Service. Their job is to enforce the Endangered Species Act and protect animals along the route, like the rusty patch bumblebee and the Indiana bat. And the judges found that they simply didn't do that. It was far too vague. They used terms like the pipeline will only harm a small percent of these animals. And that's not a line that's very enforceable.
So what the judges said, you need to put a number on this, right?
Correct.
And the point is that if you go over that number, we can come back and say you broke the law, you broke the rule here. But if you say not many, how do we enforce that?
Exactly right.
So
and so they invalidated that permit from Fish and Wildlife. The second was a little different. It's from the Park Service, the U.S. Park Service, which oversees the Blue Ridge Parkway. Not many people think of it as a national park, but it is. In fact, it's the most visited in the country. And their job, of course, is to protect the park's scenic views and people's enjoyment of the park. They granted a right-of-way for the pipeline to bore under it in Virginia, and the judges found that the Park Service, in doing so, offered no justification as to why that was within their mission. And in fact, in a one particularly harsh footnote, they said they found it remarkable that the council representing the Park Service would seem to take a litigation position that regards the premier conservation agency's role as no more than highway maintenance.
Ooh. Okay.
So they invalidated that right of way as well.
All right. So those are two permits you don't have now. What happens next?
Well, the again, those two permits were part of the condition of the fundamental approval that FERC gave in October. So now the question is, what happens? The pipeline companies will say that they can go back to the Fish and Wildlife Service and to the Park Service and address those concerns. They, of course, won't move forward in Virginia, where this case is based, but that they can otherwise continue with construction as they planned. The petitioners, the folks opposed the pipeline who brought this case in the first place, will argue, no, remember, FERC, you gave a permit that was conditioned upon all these agencies giving valid authorizations, and the judges just ruled these two authorizations aren't valid. So they're going to urge a work stoppage.
So but in terms of the appeal, it sounds like the pipeline, the people who are building the pipeline, go back and say, Fish and Wildlife, would you just put a number on this? Let's say 35. And then go to, the Forest Service and say, just put in the sentence there that says why this permission actually is part of your mission. That sounds like an easy thing for a lawyer to do. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, certainly I think most people theorize that the pipeline companies will just try and work with the agencies to fix the permit. The opponents to the pipeline argue, though, that there's no way that the Park Service can justify allowing this pipeline going across the Blue Ridge Parkway. It's just simply not possible to issue a valid permit.
It is outside of their mission, most likely. And when we put a number on it, they don't want to do that because they know we're going to kill more fish than that. I mean, that's the fear. The fear is we didn't want to put a number on it because if we do that, there's a chance that we violate. So that really is the complicating factor. So what's the next step? Does this all happen in court? Are there appeals? Or does this all happen at the bureaucratic level?
Well, the petitioners have already requested to FERC that they issue a work stoppage order, and they feel that the ruling from the judges on Monday was so strongly worded and so in their favor, they're pretty confident. They did get a work stoppage on a separate pipeline, the Mountain Valley Pipeline. Similar situation, the pipeline was found to have violated its water quality permit, and they asked for a work stoppage and they got it. So that's why they're hopeful here.
All right. Well, we will have you back and keep us posted on this. But joining our conversation now is Ryan Emanuel. He's a professor of forestry and environmental resources at NC State, also a member of the Lumbee Tribe. Ryan, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks. Happy to be back, Frank.
In addition to a recent lawsuit, there's ongoing civil rights complaints about this that surrounding this pipeline. Remind us of what those are and where they stand.
Sure. Back in May, 14 environmental justice groups in North Carolina brought a Title VI civil rights complaint to EPA against North Carolina Department of Environmental Quality. So these are organizations from 7 of the 8 affected counties, like Concerned Stewards of Halifax County, Eco Robinson, Concerned Citizens of Northampton County, but also statewide organizations like the North Carolina chapter of the NAACP and the North Carolina Environmental Justice Network. So they say that by approving state permits for the Atlantic Coast Pipeline, the state would allow the pipeline to disproportionately expose minority communities to things like safety hazards, easement takings through eminent domain, and degraded environmental quality.
And the proposed route crosses a lot of tribal land. How are the tribes involved in the process?
Yeah, so there are 4 tribes in North Carolina whose present day and traditional territories are crossed by the pipeline. And last year I showed that Native Americans make up a startlingly large fraction of people who live in the study area. That's to say census tracts located within 1 mile of the center of the pipeline. One way to think about this is 1 in 4 Native Americans who live in North Carolina live within the study area of the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. So the tribes weren't formally involved in the planning or the permitting. At least 3 of the tribes asked for formal consultation with FERC, but their requests weren't acknowledged.
Why not?
So federal agencies are legally required to consult with federally recognized Indian tribes. This means that the agency's officials have to meet with high-level tribal officials early during the permitting process to discuss specific tribal concerns and incorporate them into environmental and cultural reviews. This applies to tribally owned land and non-tribally owned land that might be part of their traditional territories. So the tribes involved here don't have full federal recognition. The Lumbee tribe is in a category of its own, governed by a 1950s era federal law. And these may be the reasons that FERC hasn't responded, but because they haven't responded, we don't know exactly why they haven't chosen to engage these tribes in consultation.
It's interesting because they're not compelled, because of this lack of recognition, not compelled to talk with these, but they are permitted if they chose to. Is that right?
Yes, and not only are they permitted, but there are federal advisory bodies like the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation and the National Environmental Justice Advisory Council that highly recommend that federal agencies consult with tribes regardless of their recognition status. So there are best practices in place and recommendations that urge these agencies to consult with tribes for the benefit of everyone.
This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio, talking with Ryan Emanuel, a professor of forestry and environmental resources at NC State. And we were talking about the Atlantic Coast Pipeline stalled for a moment because of legal challenges. But we're also talking about some of the consultation that's gone on, particularly with the fact that this proposed pipeline route crosses tribal grounds. And the Lumbee have been asked to consider this. And there was some talk of a settlement, an agreement with the pipeline creators. Talk about what's happening there.
Yeah, so in June of this year, a third-party firm attempted to broker a settlement between the pipeline developer and at least four tribes in North Carolina and Virginia. The two tribes in North Carolina were the Lumbee and the Halawasaponi. The terms of that settlement were confidential, but it did involve some kind of monetary payment to the tribes. There were concerns in these tribal governments about some of the confidential terms, and neither the Lumbee tribe nor the Halawasaponi tribe accepted the settlement.
Well, that's interesting. So, but we don't know what that settlement was or what would have involved.
No.
Now, there was some talk too that there was a tribal council that accepted an agreement, but then it didn't make it to the next level.
So, the Lumbee Tribal Council actually narrowly voted to accept the settlement, but our constitution says that any settlement or contract is only valid if it's signed by the chairman. And because the chairman didn't support this, it wasn't viable.
Yeah, the Fourth Circuit Court will also hear another case next month, and this one involves the U.S. Forest Service permits, am I right, for the Atlantic Coast Pipeline? What do you know about that?
That's correct. So next month, the Fourth Circuit will hear a case regarding the Atlantic Coast Pipeline crossing land managed by the U.S. Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management. Now, earlier this summer, the Fourth Circuit heard a very similar case from the Mountain Valley Pipeline on these two agencies, and they lost their permits from Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management. And people who are watching this think that the same thing might happen to the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. So these are two permits in addition to the ones that they lost earlier this week.
Well, Elizabeth Utz is still with us, a reporter for Southeast Energy News. Elizabeth, there's also a mobilization on the ground. Civilians want to become monitors. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so modeled off of actually what citizens did in Virginia with the Mountain Valley Pipeline, volunteers combed the pipeline route and found 150 water quality violations, which helped invalidate one of the permits that the pipeline had there. And the activists on the ground here hope to be able to, you know, they're continuing to fight the pipeline, but they also want to work to monitor its construction and mitigate harm wherever they can. So they're formed a group called North Carolina Pipeline Watch. They're looking for volunteers, and the state officials appear to be cooperating with them and are happy for the extra help.
Well, especially with budget cuts and environmental quality over the past few years, it's fun to have some citizen volunteers, I suppose. Elizabeth Utz, reporter for Southeast Energy News, thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Frank.
Sure. Ryan Emanuel is a professor of forestry and environmental resources at NC State and a member of the Lumbee Tribe. Thanks so much, Ryan.
Thanks, Frank.